the business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to over 500 businesses and farmers every week. The business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to over 500 businesses and farmers every week.
It was August 1962 when I first set foot in O'Donoghue's. A world of music, friends and booze opened up before me. I never could have guessed as I walked through the door just what the future had in store. A crossroads for my life I saw lying there to taunt me. Well, I was an actor, I played straight, I played in the Gaiety, played at the gate. My mother in 1928 had trod those boards before me. I was getting tired of the company, an actor's life did not suit me. I said goodbye, you'll never see me back here in Neary's. Johnny Moynihan, in his fusty coat, was the first to play there in Merrion Row. He brought the bazooki to Ireland, you know, way storm along John. Paddy and Maureen O'Donoghue, Kieran Burke, Luke Kelly, Ronnie Drew, Barney McKenna and me and you, in the early 1960s. Well, Paddy and Maureen, very, very sound, though she liked to camp on the moral high ground. You had long hair, you were outward bound, go down your blood-red roses. Ronnie Drew, in his fine suit of blue, and a voice like gravel that would cut you in two. We thought he was Dublin through and through, but he blew in from Dunleary. Ryan and John Kelly in the front bar, their fiddles are from the County Clare. Joe Heaney sings in the cold night air in the laneway after closing. Our sea shanties in perfect tune and Seamus Ennis in the afternoon. It was all over much too soon, days of wine and roses. Well, Banjo Barney calling the tune, Mary Jordan's a whiz on the spoons, up the Swanee and down the Broom. Barney's rising to it, they carry him bodily out to the jacks. He empties his bladder and they carry him back. He swallows his pint and he's right back on track. How the does he do it? Any afternoon you might find there Luke Kelly in his banjo and his red hair. Oh, what times, what an atmosphere, what more could a young man wish for? How I'd spend my time was never in doubt, this is what life was all about. A bowl of soup and a pint of stout, August fog amid chewed marathoshe. Dave Smith never short of a witty phrase, Sonny Brogan loved the way he plays. Ted McKenna, God bless the days of Italian mandolinos. At closing time we didn't go far, just down the road to the Pike Coffee Bar. The usual suspects, there you are, have yous no homes to go to? Putting up a note on the message board, Sweeney's men have a gig, oh Lord. We have to meet at 12 o'clock for the journey down to Galway. But the Sweeney van broke down at the door and we didn't get started till a 4:15 to the merry tune of the Dolan snore. Haul away me, Rosie. It all came to an end in 68. The rest of the world was lying in wait, and I started out for a new landscape. Set sail for the Pyrene Mountains, from the old north wall sailed away, and all me friends were there on the quay. Won't be back for many's a day, but it was bloody great while it lasted. It was August 1962 when I first set foot in O'Donoghue's. A world of music, friends and booze hastening towards me. I never could have guessed as I walked through the door just what the future had in store. A blueprint for my life I saw lying there before me.
D. Donal and Andy, thank you very much with that fantastic rendition of O'Donoghue's. Well done. Well, you're very welcome back to the programme. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1850 715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet at thebusinessrte. Well, you may have guessed that our show has a special theme this morning. We're looking at the entertainment industry, and we're joined in studio by Donal Lunny, Andy Irvine and Jim Sheridan. And we're also joined this morning by two unsung heroes of the music business, Ruth Ann Cunningham and Craig Walker. They're both professional songsmiths who've written songs for well-known pop stars. Ruth Ann, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you for having me.
You have written for Britney Spears and One Direction.
Yeah.
How did you end up doing that?
I have no idea. I won the Jacobs 2FM song contest when I was 17. My dad submitted a demo that I had written with my girl band at the time.
And Britney Spears was listening.
She was listening. She called me up. She says, I have to have that song. No. So I won that. And, ended up getting a lot of press from that. And then I met my old manager, Eamon Maguire, who used to manage the Script. And he brought me over. And I actually was mentored by Danny and Mark from the Script to begin with in Los Angeles. So I went over at 17. Big risk.
That must have been a big adventure.
It was. I'd never been to the United States before at all, and I'd never been away from my parents for more than a week, so it was a very big adventure. So it took a lot.
But you were also then making a decision, in a sense, at a very early age, that this is what you were going to do. It was going to be songwriting,
yeah.
And that was it.
No, I knew from when I was seven that that's when I wrote my first song. Well, I actually didn't know that you could be a songwriter. This is the thing, though. I didn't know that it was a job. I thought that I was just a performer. I was an artist, so I was singing, dancing. I thought it was, you know, you watch all the pop stars. I thought they all wrote their own music. I didn't realize that it could be my job. And then when I had my first hit with JoJo, Till Too Late, after I'd written that the third session I had in LA, and when that happened, my whole world just changed, and I was like, oh, I could do this as a job. This is really cool. So I just kept doing it as a job.
Because I would imagine that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are writing songs mm-hmm. for that kind of market, and they're trying desperately to get them into the artist's hand or ears or their agent's
yeah.
ears. But presumably, once you get one success, do they end up coming to you then?
Well, it varies. You know, they always say you're as good as your last hit. So obviously when I had my first one, the JoJo song came out and I was 19. I didn't really know what I was doing. I still was quite new to everything. So I got put in a lot of big rooms. I got my first publishing deal. So I was put in a lot of rooms, but I didn't actually feel really ready for that. I didn't know what, I still didn't fully know what being a songwriter for pop stars was. There's a lot of politics. There's a lot of there's a lot of things that go on. It's not just always about making the music. So it took me a few years to actually find my way. So I always call it was like my college. It was like the University of Songwriting for me, was doing all this experience. And then when I finally gathered all the experience and worked with a lot of different people, I realized how I like to make music and what brings out the best in me as a songwriter. So the best decision I ever made was figuring out what I actually don't like doing and what process I don't want to do and what works for me. And then I just started doing that, and I ended up starting having a lot more success when I did what the creative process that was best for me.
Craig, you had a very different journey because you started off young as well, but in a band and signed a record deal and all of that.
Yeah. I took that route, and I did that for a few years and then moved to London, and I was in bands in London.
Your band was Power of Dreams?
That was the band here, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I know this room really well. We did loads of sessions when I was a teenager in here. And then I moved to London. I was in a band called Archive for a number of years, who were really successful in continental Europe. Through that, I signed to, when I left that band, I signed to a French publisher, Universal in France, and did a lot of work in France, lived in France for a while, and then came back here.
That seems like an unusual route. You know, normally Irish songwriters, Irish musicians, they think about London, they might think about America, it's Ireland, England or America,
yeah.
The Paris thing opened up a whole other avenue for you of the European market.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, into mainland Europe, it was, you know, it's a huge market as well. Places like Germany's the third biggest market in the world. But it was just a series of kind of things that brought me to that point. You know, I never really planned anything.
And you've had big success with the current song, but that was slow to take off, wasn't it? Because it featured in a film and then an ad.
Yeah, it was in a Luc Besson movie originally, the original version a few years ago, and then a DJ in France picked up on it. and he re recorded it, or sorry, he remixed it, and then it just started to fly. And so yeah, funny old game.
This has been profitable for you?
Well, it takes a year to get the money, so I'm still waiting. We'll see.
Do you know how much you're going to get, or you're trying to work it out?
Absolutely no idea. No idea. Very I keep hearing, well, you keep hearing horror stories. I mean, I saw a thing yesterday where, what's his name, Pharrell Williams had received payment for 40 million plays of Happy on Pandora, that music site, and he got paid €4,000, something like that. So.
Yeah.
Whoa. Ruth-Ann, you've also written for One Direction.
Yeah.
How does it work? What's it like actually sitting down with the One Direction guys or with one of the other artists that you've worked with? Do you start off with a blank canvas and then you say, this is what I think we could do, or this is how we should approach it?
Well, it varies. Sometimes you're with the artist, sometimes you're not. So I've had experiences where I'm with the artist, and normally when I work with an artist, say like Pixie Lott or Jojo or someone I've worked with, I tend to just ask them what's been going on in their life. Because when you go in to write a song, it's not, to me, it's never a mechanical way. It has to be organic, it has to be artistic, it's music, and it shouldn't be approached mechanically, or people won't be able to feel what you're saying, even in pop music, even though people think that we might approach it just formula, it's not like that. So I ask them what's going on in their life, and I try to get a story, and if they don't have one, I tell them one of mine. And it really, for me, songwriting comes from a conversation. We could be talking about something today and I'll go home and write about it. So it has to start from conversation. So I try and just get on with them, get to know them, find a common bond.
Does it annoy you that they get all the credit? They get the star?
No, because I get the publishing. I get them. No, it doesn't, because, you know, they go out and they do the hard work and they promote the song, and I get to hear it on the radio and I get to see it performed. And, you know, it's amazing what he was saying about his song being out a few years ago, and then your song can have a whole new life with someone remixing it or someone, you know, copywriting it. And that's what I'm always after, is writing songs that can be covered.
It must be difficult to work with a lot of these stars, egos and all of that. Is that hard to manage?
I've got ways around. The thing
like
is,
what?
Well, a lot of the time, actually, stars drop their egos in a room with songwriters, people who are writing their songs, especially when they've had success with songwriters. They're not going to walk in with an attitude with someone who's helped them make millions. So I actually find they're probably the most normal and have their wall down when they're with songwriters that they respect and that they want to work with. They're not going to have an ego with you because it's benefiting everybody.
Jim, do you get respect from egos when you're working with them?
Yeah, usually, you know, it's a bit the same, you know, like you're on a set, you're in Connemara, it's freezing, you know.
There's not a lot they can do.
No, it's like it reduces everybody to normal, you know.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's trapped together, essentially.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I'll tell you one story. Richard Harris, on the first day we did The Field, he fell down on the ground, you know. And I was like, you okay, Richard? He said, oh, no, I'm not. No, no, no. Next minute, a big limo comes across the bog to pick him up, and he's off in the limo to chat up the nurse, of course, in the hotel. And so I was like, what's up with him? And he's like, somebody had put sugar in his porridge and he was diabetic. And it was this big Connemara man about 6'4" who was doing the catering. And he was crying, telling me that he didn't put the sugar in. So the next day, Richard was bouncing around totally happy, and the Connemara man said to me, there's about 8 spoons of sugar in that porridge today. So don't mess with the crew. You learned that early, you know.
That's a
don't
leveler.
Mess with the catering.
Oh, God.
Craig, what about you and songwriting? You've obviously been writing songs for a long time. Does it get easier? Do you get better at it?
I think you get better at it. You know, if you do anything long enough, you get better at it, for sure. I think it's more difficult to surprise yourself. You know, it's easy to fall into a formula. I find that's the bit that's probably the hardest, is to keep doing something that actually inspires yourself.
What is it about writing songs, though, that young people seem to be, you know, a lot of artists I know, like, do it for X amount of time and then they can't do it anymore. It's just, it kind of like
it's
stops.
A
the
young
ones
man's,
who don't write.
Young woman's game.
The yeah. ones who don't write.
I don't know.
Their like own music.
Well, we've got two gentlemen here with, I don't know, it must be between you, probably 75 years of touring and career and playing and all of that. Do you think?
That's kind of you.
That was shared. That was shared. And I could have the maths wrong as well. But I mean, is it something that you tire of? Do you feel sometimes that the industry is a young person's game?
I actually don't recognise the word industry.
And you wrote a song called Never Tire of the Road.
Never Tire of the Road. Well, I wish I hadn't done that because I'd have to live up to it all the time now.
So you don't. And touring, it doesn't... Everybody gets into their comfort zone. And touring obviously has to take you out of your comfort
zone.
Yes.
Well, I've never been a man for a comfort zone. I the hard life is the one I always chose for some reason. I must be guilty. I must have had some kind of guilt complex in my childhood, but I always picked the longest way around.
What about you, Donald? Do you get tired of it? A lot of travel.
I don't. I like playing music. I love being involved in music. So you know, it's just it's a thing I do, and I feel lucky that I can. Mm. And can remain involved.
When we talk about the music industry and we're talking about One Direction there, Ruth Ann, a lot of people talk sometimes very sceptically about X Factor and the X Factor phenomenon. They'd be quite critical of it. You had an interesting, Craig, didn't you? Kind of an X Factor type experience where you went off to France.
Yeah, I actually didn't. The publisher didn't tell me what I was going over for, so I was a bit suspicious. And he was at the airport waiting for me, which was very rare. And he said, oh, it's kind of a TV show, you know, and I normally wouldn't be interested in doing that kind of stuff. So I went to this like chateau, and it was a mansion in Provence, and there was like seven or eight different writers there, each given a workstation, and this competition winner was brought in, and she'd spent 3 days going around with two A&R people with a clipboard kind of marking the songs that we were writing. That was my one and only experience of
that's
that.
Very odd.
You didn't like it.
I worked on the X Factor in the USA. I was a vocal coach on the last series of it, and we wrote the album of the artist who won, but it was a totally different experience.
That's French.
Maybe it's the French.
That's a slightly different way of doing things. Well, we were talking there about touring. And the life of any touring artist obviously has to be pretty tough, living out of a suitcase, being away from family, sleeping on a tour bus, I'm sure it takes its toll. But I suppose what happens when you add the punishing regime of a professional ballerina to the mix? Liam Geraghty caught up with the ballet dancers currently touring the length and breadth of Ireland with Ballet Ireland's production of Swan Lake to get the lowdown on life as a ballerina.
An amazing thing to come out and see all of those people, and it actually just makes you feel wow. For a performer, you know, it just turns you on, basically.
Weaving our way through boxes of props and scattered tutus, director of Ballet Ireland Anne Maher is giving us a backstage glimpse of their latest production of Swan Lake.
These are girlies.
Hello, ladies.
Hi, are you all naked?
No, they're not
making. In the dressing rooms, dancers are busy preparing for tonight's performance. Kate Houghton is one of the swans.
And our main aim is to be dancing exactly the same time, exactly the same movement. So in order to do that, you have to lose that competitive edge and just work as a team. It's really rewarding, yeah.
Anne says with so much cost involved, they can't afford to have a lame duck.
Swan Lake will cost us in and around 500 grand to mount, which is a hell of a lot of money. Salary costs alone will cost me over the period of the tour about 180 grand. So it's an expensive business.
And overseeing that business can be a daunting task.
It's a huge responsibility, and it's one that sometimes keeps me awake at night. And I don't jest when I say it keeps me awake at night. It does, but equally then, you know, after an opening night or a particularly good performance or something that just goes particularly well and it's up there on the stage, it's fantastic. You get such a buzz. You know, it can take you 2 hours and... at night and a glass of wine to kind of come down from a high afterwards. I can't underestimate how wonderful it is to do the thing you love most in the world and make a living at it. So this is the sea that you can see in which our prince is going to drown later.
So what exactly is this? Is it a huge piece of fabric?
This is a massive, massive piece of painted silk. And I'm just taking hold of the edge here, and as we do this, and you create air underneath it, now I'm doing it really badly, like that, the ripples will go across, and the sea can come up to about this height, so it looks like an incredibly stormy sea. And with the dark light, it looks stunning.
For most dancers, just like athletes, retirement often comes early, as principal dancer and tonight's prince, Michael Reavy, explains.
With men, the problem really would be that as you get older, you get stiffer, you enjoy beer a lot more, and you tend to get a bit of belly or something like that. And also, it's such a hard life. You know, the good things, the things that you enjoy, eating, drinking, being out with friends, partying, you can't do that very much whenever you are a dancer. So you got to weigh up what you want to have in your life.
Anne has one word to describe retirement.
Tragic. It is very difficult to give up. The body is not being very willing and it is less able, and that is the tragedy of being a dancer. And at some point you have to begin to part company with roles that are just too challenging, and then obviously comes the day where you have to decide, or if you don't decide, then somebody else decides for you. That can be worse.
Michael, originally from Bangor but now based in Johannesburg, says dancers often have a backup career plan, and it's not always in the same field.
I bought a hobby shop, which is something that kind of comes from my childhood. My father used to build and fly model airplanes and had a model shop in Belfast. I'm not sure yet if it's actually going to be financially, would you say, viable for me, but I'm giving it a go. You don't know unless you try.
Well, they look rather dead at the moment, but those are the swans. I can assure you they're not dead. We will bring them to life later. Essentially, you're looking at two rows of upside-down white tutus just draped out on the seats in the auditorium.
Anne says there are some elements of the touring side of things that she really doesn't miss.
It is very tough. You lose complete and utter understanding of what day of the week it is, what town you're in, where you are. I mean, one of my biggest fantasies when I was a dancer touring was my own washing machine. So, you know, that's the kind of sad fantasies you have when you're on tour.
Hello.
Back in the Swans' dressing rooms, we wondered whether Kate Houghton ever busted out a ballet move on a club dance floor.
No, I try and avoid doing that. I think I would get teased pretty badly if I did that. No, definitely not.
Liam Geraghty reporting there. Well, I meant to say that Ruth Ann Cunningham's One Direction hit, for those who want to know, is called Where Do Broken Hearts Go? And it's the current one. Just want to say a huge thanks to all our guests this morning: Jim Sheridan, Donal Lunny, Andy Irvine, Ruth Ann Cunningham and Craig Walker. Donal, Andy and Ruth Ann are going to play us out with Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. That's all we have time for. Many thanks for listening. Have a great Christmas. Bye-bye.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, we'll find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa of toys and goodies on a sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. So I'm offering this simple phrase: to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
The Business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. Merry Christmas to one and all. Bank of Ireland, for small steps, for big steps, for life.
And The Business, presented by Richard Curran, is an Old Yard production for RTE Radio 1.